Boy, do I have a hell of a podcast for you today. We're going to visit Italy twice. We'll check in with ancient Israelites and get their understanding of a place they called Sheol. Then we'll jump right into the words of Jesus to see our inconsistencies when we interpret them. Then we get into the heart of the matter, discussing several potential faults in our modern-day theologies, all on the way to answering the question, what is the problem with hell?
Welcome to the Sky Pilot Podcast that explores questions of faith, spirituality, and religion. I'm Dan Matthews, and I don't have all the answers, but I do enjoy the questions. Welcome to the podcast where every question is an invitation into a spiritual quest, and you're invited along for the journey.
Okay, so we'll start with a quick disclaimer. If you are someone who takes delight in the idea that the wicked, the non-believers, the people who never professed Christ during their lifetimes, are going to roast in hell, then, well, you're going to be profoundly disappointed, uncomfortable with this podcast. You may well find that entering in this episode causes you to abandon all hope. Well, abandon your hope for the suffering of others.
Oh, I see what you did there.
Today's topic comes to us from a suggestion from a listener in Italy. Today we're going to talk about hell, and no, not like your experience of sitting through a middle school band concert, which is indeed its own kind of hell. But in this case, I mean honest to goodness, well, maybe honest to badness, place of eternal punishment, hell. Now let me say, there are a couple of problems even before we get started. Christianity, and before that Judaism, have not really had a consistent and unchanging view of hell. In the Old Testament, the closest thing we have to hell is the place that is most often referred to as Sheol. But you can't really call this hell, because this place is where everyone, absolutely everyone, goes when they die. The righteous and the evildoers alike all go to Sheol. So there isn't a differentiation between the good and the bad once you get there. It's one place for all people. Then things began to change. From about several hundred years before the birth of Jesus to about the time of the fall of the temple, the year 70, this idea, the idea of hell, began to evolve. Judaism still believed in Sheol, but there began to emerge a belief that there would be, well, separate areas within Sheol, one for the good and one for the bad. And eventually this idea morphed even further into the idea that Sheol was a place where only the wicked were sent to be punished.
But the Christians have clarity on the idea of hell, right?
Yeah, you would hope so, wouldn't you? But no. So the ancient Israelites either believed in Sheol, a place where everyone went, or there's also some indication that even the earlier viewpoint of this place is that it wasn't really a place, that they believed when you died, you died. Because we don't, according to that viewpoint, have an immortal soul. So when the idea of an immortal soul began to develop in Judaism and Christianity, there was then a problem. Our souls are immortal and live for all eternity. Then it makes sense that the righteous get to spend eternity enjoying their reward in the presence of God. But if souls are immortal and eternal, what happens to the wicked? So it could be argued that we, humanity, created hell as a solution to this problem. Interestingly, even the words of Jesus are a little confusing, and some of that is our fault. Jesus often used the word Gehenna. Now, let me quote a passage for you just so you get that in context. In Mark 9:43, Jesus says, "If your hand causes you to sin, cut it off. It's better for you to enter life maimed than to have two hands and go to Gehenna, to the unquenchable fire." First, let me say that this is a really interesting passage, and some Christians have had a tendency to take this passage and Jesus, when he speaks, quite literally.
Well, it does seem pretty literal, doesn't it?
True, but these Christians have a tendency to take Jesus literally, but only for part of the passage. So let's assume that the passage is indeed to be taken literally, which is not a bad place to start whenever we encounter a Bible passage for the first time, when we really start thinking about it. So we understand that Jesus meant the idea of hell as a threat of punishment, and that perhaps it was literal. And many people read this passage and believe exactly that. But there's more to the passage than that part. Because there's more to this passage than talking about hell. What about the portion where Jesus says, if our hand causes us to sin, we should cut it off? If he meant it literally, I mean, the passage, didn't he mean the whole passage literally? No, no, no. Lots of people would say that's really just a metaphor to make his point, which places us in a bit of difficulty trying to decide which portion of this passage is literal and which is a metaphor. Now, if you ask me to interpret this passage, I would say it's really not intended to be a threat of eternal damnation, but a reminder to carefully consider our actions and focus on the ultimate goal, living the life that God intends. And also, interestingly, and this may help, the word Gehenna is not a theological term, it's a geographical term, referring to a valley that is southwest of Jerusalem, the Valley of Hinnom. So Jesus is absolutely using Gehenna as a metaphor. Unless, of course, you believe that when wicked people die, they all go to a valley that is southwest of Jerusalem. So when I was younger, there was an explanation that Hinnom was used as a garbage dump where trash was burned by the people who lived in Jerusalem. And those fires, when they burned, smoldered and actually never went out. They were constantly smoldering. I actually was taught that in seminary. Interestingly, there's really no evidence for this idea that Gehenna was a valley of smoldering, ever-burning fires. The truth is that we can trace it back to a particular person centuries and centuries ago who offered this explanation kind of out of thin air. And once they had said it, we just began repeating it in the church as if it was true for many, many centuries. Now, there is some evidence that the valley at some point was used by some other cultures with other faith for human sacrifice, where the victims were burned. And in all likelihood, by the time Jesus came along, the association between that valley and the fiery cultic abominations were forever connected. So Gehenna was a place in which horrible things were done in the name of another faith. And fire was involved. And it may be that Jesus was not saying that there is a hell created by God that is similar to Gehenna, but that losing track of what is important can be a slippery slope that results can lead to something horrible, like what happened in Gehenna. Now, as just a historical footnote, the truth is that much of our modern understanding of hell comes more from the Middle Ages than it does from Jesus and the early church. Your modern-day view of hell is probably much more influenced by an author who is the second Italian in our podcast today. Dante's Inferno is almost certainly shaping the understanding and images of hell held by Western Christians far more than we are shaped by the actual teachings of Jesus or his disciples. All of this is to say, we are going to talk today not about what hell is, but the theological difficulty with the common definition of hell. So, just for a working definition, I'm going to use the word hell to describe the place where those who did not measure up during their lives had such a life of notorious sin and wickedness that God decided to send them to hell. Hell is a place of eternal punishment for the damned. That's our working definition. So the listener who sent the suggestion for this episode made a very thoughtful point. In essence, the email said, "My faith is important to me. I want to continue to grow in my faith, and I want to follow Jesus, but the doctrine of hell is more of a stumbling block than a helpful guide for me living the faith I want to live." I think that is absolutely a great point. So let's jump in. So first, let me ask this question. Why would anyone cling to or take comfort in or draw strength from the idea that there is a hell, using the definition that I just gave you previously? Well, the idea of hell has frequently been popular amongst Christians who are either suffering in the moment or who see themselves as suffering and being oppressed. So imagine the Christians in the early church who were going through persecution. They were suffering, but they were righteous. So why were they suffering? Well, one answer is that there will be a reckoning later on. Right now, the wicked flourish and the righteous suffer, but we can understand, I think, how there might be some comfort for these people to believe that there's a future point where things will be set right, the tables will be turned, and finally the evil will suffer and the righteous will finally receive their reward. Now, this can also be true amongst groups that are not truly oppressed, but who have adopted the worldview that they are. In the United States, there are plenty of white, wealthy, evangelical Protestants who are hardly experiencing hardship or oppression at the hands of the culture, but who have adopted the worldview that they are. And they too have a theology in which they will receive reward, and the people who they believe to be their oppressors, the people who they are against, will be punished and brought low. So let's talk about the idea of hell. First, let's quote a passage of scripture from 1 John. God is love. Yeah, that's the whole thing. That's the whole passage we're going to be talking about right here. That's it. And if we believe that to be true, that God is love, then we have some problems with the popular idea of hell. If we believe in a just and loving God, then there seems to be, well, real difficulty with understanding that someone who didn't live up to some standard, whatever the standard is, that person will be punished for all eternity.
Oh, well, you say it like that, and it doesn't really sound fair or right, does it?
No, it doesn't. So for many people, a just, loving God does not seem to reconcile with the idea that bad people get eternal torment. Secondly, the idea of hell encounters some problems when viewed through the lens of some pretty traditional thinking of Christian theology. So, for example, do you believe that God is all-powerful? Do you believe that God is all-knowing? If so, that means that God knows, well, everything before it happens. And for some forms of theology, it means that absolutely everything is predestined. Every single thing that happens is predestined to happen. God chose it and intended it to happen. So by this theology, everyone who goes to hell was chosen by God to go to hell, even before they were born, and they never even had a chance. Which again, runs into the problem we spoke about, God being just and loving. Okay, third problem, the traditional notion of hell seems to ignore what I might call special circumstances. There are people who do horrible things because they suffer from some form of organic mental illness. We know that people who've returned from and survived physical and emotional trauma, such as being in the military in battle, they can return from those experiences forever changed and not be the person they were before. Certainly not the person God created them to be or intended them to be. Or how about the child who's born with such limited intellect that he or she will never be able to make the faith commitment that many say is necessary to receive salvation and avoid hell? I mean, don't we need a theology of God that sees God taking things like these into account when determining what happens to us when we die? Then there's the idea that only Christians go to heaven and that everyone else goes to hell. So the child born in remote Mongolia, who never hears of the Christian faith, is going to be sent to hell by God? By the way, just my personal theology at this point, if this were actually true, then we are all likewise destined to hell. Because I'm pretty sure that if the only way to get to heaven is to personally profess faith in Christ and to dedicate your life to His service, then a child in Mongolia who never hears, who never has the opportunity to hear the good news of Jesus Christ, well, that child is more of an indictment of the Christians who never made an effort to bring news to that child than it is of the child living in Mongolia. Ultimately, if you're going to make a decision about what you believe about hell, I think you first need to make a decision about the nature of God. And if you're a Christian, the easiest way to do that is to look to Jesus Christ and ask a simple question. What was the point? I mean, what was and is the point? What's the point of God taking the form of Jesus and living in the midst of humanity? For me, the answer to that question is pretty easy. Love and relationship. God so dearly loved humanity that He became flesh so that all of humanity might know of God's love for them and hopefully, in response, desire to be in relationship with God as much as God longs to be in relationship with us. So what was Jesus' intent? Well, let's look at another Bible passage, John 12:32. And when I am lifted up from the earth, I will draw all people to myself.
Yes, you've used that one before, but so that's it. No hell. Everyone goes to heaven.
Okay, so let me now say that we are going to venture into what I often call the gospel according to Dan. In other words, what I'm about to say is not anything other than the way I have worked this out for me. I believe God, through Jesus, wants to be in a loving relationship with absolutely everyone.
So, again, I ask, does everyone go to heaven?
Yeah, all I can say to answer that question is, I hope so. And it confuses me when I encounter Christians who don't hope so. I think God desires to be in relationship with us, and relationship requires both parties to have freedom of choice. So there is maybe a possibility of ultimate separation, but it isn't. In my theology, it isn't ever initiated by God. I think God loves us so much that God would give us the choice to say no and reject the gift that is being offered. So now, for a number of reasons, I tend to believe in a pearly gates moment.
Okay, meaning what?
Well, you know how you have seen countless cartoons in which someone shows up at the pearly gates to have an angel, St. Peter, Jesus, someone else, check their name in the book. I think there is a moment like that, but there isn't a book. Everyone is invited in. Everyone is welcome. No one is turned away from God in this moment. The only rejecting that will happen during this moment is from our end, not from God's. This also takes care of a couple of other issues. People who have never heard of God, people who were raised not to believe by their parents, people who had some psychological or physical limitation, all of these people, well, actually all of us in general, are made fully whole, fully aware of the gift that is being offered, and then, once we are made whole, then in that moment, we can choose. Now, can I prove this through the Bible? Probably not, because there's not much of our faith that we can actually prove when it comes right down to it.
So, do some say no?
I think not, but they are given the choice, because God has given them free will. And what happens to them if they do? Well, I tend to think they don't. Look, when I want my 5-year-old granddaughter to make a choice, I give her two unequal choices. What do you want for dinner? Do you want green beans or dead old bugs? She has, not surprisingly, chosen the green beans every single time. Because we are given a choice, but when the disparity between the two choices is so great, I tend to think everyone chooses heaven. I think the choice given to us by God is something like that. We are all made whole, given full understanding so we can make an informed decision, and it's hard for me to imagine that anyone has ever rejected God's offer. And that's all for today. Hey, thanks to the listener in Italy who took the time to send an email and make a suggestion for this podcast episode. Also, if you'd like to get in touch with me, if you have a suggestion for an episode or a question for me, or just want to comment on this podcast, as always, I would love to hear from you. My email address is dan@skypilot.zone. That's dan@skypilot.zone. And on your spiritual journey, may you ask questions, seek answers, and boldly go wherever the quest takes you. Thanks for joining us here today and being part of the Sky Pilot Faith Quest community. This is a great place to ask questions you wouldn't feel comfortable or safe asking in other places. And remember, the sign of a strong faith, solid religion, or healthy spiritual journey is not certainty, but that you keep asking questions.